I'm not optimistic. I'm not pessimistic. I am determined.
G'day gang, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Hidden Wire podcast, episode 411, my interview with Dr. Neil Barnard. Guys, my name is Lee Martinuzzi, the Hidden Wire guy, here to inspire you to live your life with greater passion and purpose. To do that, I believe we need to discover our why, define our life compass, and use that to navigate our life with greater purpose towards living with more freedom, fulfillment, and happiness. That's the mission I'm on, and that's how I want to assist you as well. I do that by talking with people one-on-one and also doing this podcast, guys. I love to interview people. People have so much knowledge, so much amazing value to give that in interviewing them, it's really helped transform my life. And I believe it will help you guys in the process of following your own journey and really improving in aspects of your life that really matter. Today, I'm interviewing Dr. Neil Barnard. He's a health expert into nutrition. And certainly health is a very important part of our life. So that's why I want to bring him on the show. There's a couple of selfish reasons why I wanted to have Neil on the show as well. First and foremost is that I'm starting to eat more vegan style foods as well. And currently have been doing it for a few months and finding really good effects and benefits from it in my personal life. So it's not to encourage you to do it or anything like that. It's really just to explore health and perhaps it gives you some inspiration as to why it's important to find and discover your own motivation to make health life, you know, life changes that matter to you. And certainly that's been the motivation for me as well. And if you don't have that self sort of motivation, that self drive, then you may not find yourself sticking to those changes as well. Neil certainly can share some insight. He's an amazing scientist and has a lot of medical research into this area of nutrition. A lot more than I wish to go through in this episode, or a lot deeper, I should say. I just try to keep it as simple as possible because that's how I am, but also because I think that's the way we can absorb the information better for those of us just starting out and really trying to improve our health in more simple ways. When it comes to, you know, adopting a vegan style lifestyle, it is quite complex. We are conditioned to assume a certain way of life is healthy for us based on our upbringing, etc., and how society and culture has conditioned us. But perhaps there is a different way, and perhaps the vegan option is something that you might like to give a go. Certainly I've given it a go and it's provided me some benefits, and Neil gives me some more clarification around some of the questions that I had about, you know, the ins and outs of a vegan style diet. And we talk about obviously the consumption of meat, but all animal products, including dairy. We even touch on, you know, eating sugars and what's right and wrong there, or how we can adopt more suitable practices as it comes to our overall health. So guys, you'll love this show. If you do, please make sure you share it with your network, share it with your family, share it with your friends, share the love, help me spread the message. That would be awesome. And also, if you'd like to connect, you can connect with me at Facebook. Predominantly on social media, that's where I'll be. You can try Twitter, but I'm not there as often. And also my email address, thehiddenwhyguy@gmail.com. If you guys want to chat, if you've got any questions or feedback for the show, then reach out to me. If you'd just like to set up a time so we can talk about, you know, your purpose, your why, and see if we can provide some assistance there, I would love to do that too, guys. That's a part of what I do, and it certainly gives me a lot of value to be able to give in any way I can. So if that's you, if you're looking for a little bit more reason or purpose or motivation in life, and want to align your life with what you value, then certainly reach out and let's have a chat. Other than that, guys, enjoy this show with Dr. Neil Barnard, and we will speak at the other side. Thanks. G'day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Hidden Wire podcast. Lee Martinuzzi here, and I am joined by Dr. Neil Barnard. How are you, Neil?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm excellent, mate. Whereabouts are you in this world?
Washington, D.C.
Washington, D.C. Well, it's a pleasure to have you. Thank you for taking the time out to join me here on this podcast. Look forward to chatting to you about your new book, Cheese Trap, and all about really just health and nutrition and how we can all benefit from your knowledge and what you've been researching. You've dedicated your life to it, so I'm sure you've got a lot of information that can benefit us all. So looking forward to our chat. Firstly, Neil, tell us a little bit about your story, maybe just a brief snippet into your background. What drives you, what gives you passion, and what makes you jump out of bed every day?
You know, I have to say all the nutrition stuff I'm doing now is completely the opposite of how I was raised. I grew up in Fargo, North Dakota, which is up near the Canadian border. I come from a long line of cattle ranchers. And
there you go.
And every day of my life, it was roast beef, baked potatoes, and corn. Except for special occasions when it was roast beef, baked potatoes, and peas. So suffice to say, we didn't know much about nutrition. But foods give us huge power. They can prevent illness to a very substantial degree. They can even reverse it sometimes. So my goal is to put this to work.
Okay, cool. So you're a vegan at the moment, is that right?
Yes, although I have to say, I don't like to say I am vegan because that makes it sound like I've got antennae coming out of my head. What I like,
I don't know how to term it either.
What I would rather say is my foods are vegan. In other words, I use that word to apply to what's on my plate rather than to me.
Okay.
So I say I ate a vegan breakfast, and in fact, everything I ate is vegan. So it just means no animal products.
Okay, and when did that? I mean, growing up from a line of cattle ranches, when did that sort of occur? That transition.
Well, first step was the year before I went to medical school. I had a job in the basement of a hospital in Minneapolis where I helped out at autopsies. When people died, we would examine the body.
Oh, wow.
And that is, well, I have to tell you, it's a real eye-opener of an experience. And one day we had a person who died in the hospital of a massive heart attack, and we pulled the ribs off the chest, and that exposed the heart, and we saw massive atherosclerosis, which is basically, it's like concrete in the arteries. And the pathologist would say to me, you know, this is your bacon and eggs, Neil. That's what, you know. And so I kept getting these lectures over the dead bodies as to what, you know, how diet affected them. But on this particular day, when the pathologist left the room, and I had to, I always had to clean up afterwards. So I put the ribs back in the chest and I sewed up the skin. And then I went up to the cafeteria and they were serving ribs for lunch. And I want to tell you, it smelled like a dead body and it looked like a dead body. And I suddenly was hit by the fact it is a dead body. It's not a human body, but if you're eating the ribs of a cow or a chicken breast or something like that, you start to realize, wait a minute, is this really something I want to put in my mouth? And so I wouldn't call that necessarily an ethical or a health or a philosophical thing, but I couldn't eat that.
It just was off-putting, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So from there, you know, I started medical school, and the more you learn, the more you realize that humans do best on what I'm going to call an herbivorous diet. And this,
sorry, what was that term? Herbivorous?
Yeah, this foray we have made into pretending we are carnivores doesn't really work out so well.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's interesting, and I'm sort of making a transition now and certainly eating a lot more vegan foods. I still eat a bit of fish and sometimes have the occasional ice cream on the weekend. But in progress, I'm just giving an experiment, and I always like to ask that question, why? Unfortunately, I'm lucky to have a mate who likes to choose vegan-style foods as well, and he's been a great influence in my life and my health journey as well. So I've got him to thank for this, but my curiosity in this area is certainly deepened. And as you said, you know, the more information that we have, we can then make better decisions as well as it relates to living our life. And I don't just talk to people in regards to health. I talk to people in regards to all areas of life that I think are important, relationships, you know, contribution, expression, etc. And health is just one of those. So I really look forward to finding out why, you know, vegan style foods are better for our health. Because again, I grew up with you know, not a terrible diet, but probably not a terribly good diet either. And certainly for the sense of your diet, you know, meat and potatoes and vegetables doesn't sound terribly bad either. And I assume a lot of people out there would think that's a perfectly normal diet.
Yes, it's because they don't associate one thing with another. Cigarettes were totally sensible until eventually people started to think, maybe that's why we have lung cancer. And eating meat sounds perfectly sensible until you start to think the meat goes down the intestinal tract. Maybe this is part of why we have colorectal cancer. And the answer is yes. There is now no question about it that diet affects your risk of many kinds of cancer, probably the majority of cancer cases. There's a role for diet, and especially the digestive ones like colorectal cancer.
Which makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, obviously. And so there are certain foods like bacon and sausage and ham and pepperoni and all of these things that really it makes no sense to eat them ever at all. And all medical experts should agree on that. If they don't agree on it, they're just not looking at the evidence.
So that's like processed meats you're talking about?
Yeah, I'm talking about what are referred to as processed meats.
Okay.
but red meat has pretty much similar kind of evidence for it. And then when we're talking about something like chicken or turkey, they have carcinogens as well that form in them. So bottom line, the more you look at it, the more we start to realize things that we thought were innocuous. And we thought that diabetes just comes maybe from a gene or something you inhaled, and heart disease comes from bad luck, and Alzheimer's just comes from being old. And research studies show, no, wait, it has to do with what you put in your mouth. And you're not going to live forever, no matter what you do.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, when we eat in a healthful way, we can protect ourselves. And what is more important than that is how we help those we love. So I can take whatever risks I may want in my own life.
Yeah.
But if I'm raising my 7-year-old daughter and I'm teaching her to like foods that will help prevent cancer and keep her healthy, then I'm being a good dad.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to speak just of me, but everyone is in this same kind of situation. So to take it away from any kind of finger wagging, this is information people didn't really have. Yeah. And it's continuing to come out, but we have it now. And so my job as a doctor is to convey that information, let people know what's going on. And sometimes it's surprising. You know, my new book, The Cheese Trap, is filled with things that kind of blew people away when they read about it. I feel your pain, but it's really been interesting to get the word out.
Yeah. No, look, I love it. And certainly I'm fascinated by it, and I'm open to it all as well. And I guess, I mean, the challenge for you is all those people that are closed-minded in their perspectives. And again, not to point fingers or anything like that, but you know, just to be open to it, to explore the information, I think is really important for us all in life. Whether you adopt, you know, a vegan-style diet or whatever it is, you know, it's just about being open to that information and exploring it yourself and assessing the truth. I want to approach this interview from a very layman sort of perspective because that works best for me, and it might take away some of the edge from the scientific sort of research that you have available for us. But I just want to keep it as simple as possible, so I'm going to ask some probably simple questions. And the first one I want to ask is about processed meats. I mean, why would we look at meat, considering all parts of our diet? You know, we've got a variety of diets in this world today, things that we put in our mouth and digest. Why would we look at meat as a problem to cancers, etc.? Why would we go there first, or maybe we didn't? And why processed meats? I mean, there's a lot of cultures that eat a lot of processed meats and seem to be quite healthy, depending on what other combinations of lifestyles they have.
Okay. It started out with just observations.
Yeah.
People who eat meat have cancer. They have more cancer than other people. Now, this doesn't mean that every meat eater gets cancer, that they don't, any more than every smoker gets cancer. Most smokers don't get cancer.
Right.
But so many do that the patterns started to become obvious. And in a country like the United States, we have 50,000 people die of colorectal cancer every year. And people started to connect the dots, and it became really obvious that the people who were not eating certain foods tended not to get it. So if a person does not eat bacon, sausage, ham, hot dogs, those kinds of things, their risk was much lower.
Right.
So you do one study and another study and another study, you look at different age groups, and pretty soon the pattern becomes just so convincing that there's really no question about it.
And that's a really good point because, sorry, I'm going to interrupt. But,
yeah, please.
You know, there's a lot of people in their 50s or 60s, and I have people that I know that would say, oh, no, I've been absolutely fine eating, you know, bacon my life and blah, blah, blah. Everything has been in moderation, and I'm absolutely healthy. But again, maybe they're just not one of the people that have been affected by that sort of diet or that food.
Or not affected yet.
Not affected yet. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't say that in a frivolous way. Half of men get cancer. So you might get lucky. About a third of women get cancer.
Yeah.
And it would not be that way if people followed a vegan diet where they ate no animal products at all. So there are a lot of things you can do to give yourself cancer. Smoking is a great way to get respiratory cancers. And because the carcinogens are excreted through the kidneys and into the urine, you're going to increase your risk of bladder cancer too.
Mm.
So the things go down your digestive tract, they're going to increase the risk of digestive cancers and also hormonal cancers like prostate cancer, for example, uterine cancer. Because these foods that we eat affect our hormone function.
Mm.
So there are ways you can give yourself a higher risk of cancer. And Cancer is not fun. When I was in high school, many years ago, I'm talking about the late 1960s,
yeah.
I had a friend named Ira who smoked cigarettes. He was maybe 17.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Ira telling me, this was late 1960s, he said, yeah, by the time I get cancer, there's going to be a cure. Well, I got news for you, Ira. That was 50 years ago, and lung cancer today is just as bad as it was back then. So we don't want to go there. So it's a good idea to prevent these things. But also just things that people...
I still wonder about that question, because that question comes up often is, you know, they're going to have stuff that will protect me, or more commonly, I've got to die of something.
You do have to die of something, but why don't you die in the Monaco Grand Prix, you know, racing it, you know, a couple hundred miles an hour, or doing something you love. The way most people die is very different. Meat eaters start to die when they're 30. By that I mean we're gaining weight. What I mean is our health is starting to erode. We're gaining weight.
Yeah.
Our energy is not so good. Our digestion isn't so good. People are getting hemorrhoids and varicose veins and things, and they don't recognize that this relates to food. And they start to be on medications, their blood pressure is not so good, and then the heart attacks start maybe in the 40s and 50s. And we think, well, that's just genes, isn't it? And the doctor says, yeah, and it couldn't be your food. It's got to be your genetics. And we get in this complicit dishonesty about what it's all about. And by the time you're in your 60s, most people are on medications. When you should be feeling good and having lots of energy, people are really slowing down, and then you start seeing friends in the obituaries. Instead of that you want a life where you're growing and doing great, and you have a pretty much, you know, you just don't decline. And then maybe in the late 80s or 90s or 100s or whatever, then you are going to run out of gas at some point, and you're going to have various organ failure, but your death will hopefully be relatively quick. And as I say, I'm going to die in a flaming inferno in the Monaco Grand Prix.
Yeah, I like that. And I certainly couldn't agree more. Like, why die in a slow, sort of painful manner? And if that is from your 30s, and look, this is part of the reason why I like to interview people like yourself, is because it's important to me, you know? And I've really given my body a good run for the first 30 years of my life, and I've thankfully realized that and had people around me to support me in that, to where now I'm really wanting to drive my health. Plus, I've got two daughters that I want to be that role model for, as you said before. So I think it's really an important point to make. As far as meats, but, like, you know, look at processed meats, and the Italians, I would suggest, have been eating processed meats for eons. And again, I don't know, but why is it okay for them to do it? I mean, do they seem to have a long life in certain parts of the country as well?
They have colorectal cancer just like we do. People who tend to it, it's a dose related phenomenon. It's just like smoking. You know, the old idea of I'm sitting in a bistro in Rome and I'm smoking my cigar and I'm eating my aged cheese and I might be eating some salami or something like that, and we think nothing's going to hurt me. People die in Italy just like they die in France, just like in other places, if they eat these foods. So the risk does not depend on whether you're in a romantic location or not.
Right. Yeah, very good discernment. Is meat altogether absolutely in research, etc., in scientific sort of lingo, is meat just outruled? It's just not something that the body can handle, or is it? Can we digest little portions of meat here and there? Because, I mean, again, that's an argument that I'd hear often, is that, you know, our ancestors ate meat. They'd go out and hunt and eat some meat and, you know, perhaps be without it for a few weeks, but they'd eat a bit of meat here and there when they needed to.
Okay, you've raised a number of really important points. I don't want people to get too far ahead of themselves. Maybe it's useful to just start with what kind of risks are we really talking about.
Yeah.
So far we've talked about digestive cancers, and that's a real thing, because when you see what happens to a person who has that fate, you really don't want it. But the one that obviously is maybe a little bit more familiar to people would be something like heart disease.
Yeah.
Where a meat eater compared to a person who doesn't eat animal products at all is clearly at higher risk of heart disease, and that's because animal products have saturated fat, which raises your cholesterol. They also have cholesterol itself, and the cholesterol particles irritate the artery walls and cause little bumps to form that can rupture and cause a big clot to form in your artery, and suddenly you got a heart attack. And that clearly is linked to having more meat and animal products in general. Alzheimer's disease has recently been linked to the saturated fat that we were describing, which is, well, dairy is the biggest source, but meat is second. Yeah. And people who avoid that bad fat are at much lower risk of Alzheimer's disease. So there are many other diseases I could talk about, but those are a few.
Yeah.
And then you say, well, okay, what about moderation? Can I just have a little bit?
Yeah.
And the answer is you can do anything you want to. And the less, you know, if you reduce the amount you're having, that's a good move. Hmm. However, where we really see the benefits, it's like when a smoker cuts down, that's a good move. But when they quit, they're just in a completely different class. And so when a meat eater cuts down, usually they're slimmer, their risk of diabetes falls, their risk of cancer falls. But the ones who quit completely, it's just a whole other thing. Their health is often dramatically better. Plus, the temptation factor just kind of goes away. And so if a smoker hasn't had a cigarette for a year, they're not thinking about it. If you're having bacon two or three times a week, you think about it. It's in your refrigerator. It tempts you. It brings you back. You're a bad example for your family. If you just haven't had it, and if you've figured out the vegan versions or whatever, you discover that your thinking just gets in a much better track.
Hmm. I've never had vegan bacon. Is it any good?
Different ones are different. Some of them are a liberal interpretation of the original. The vegan sausages are almost indistinguishable. The vegan bacons, try different ones. But I have to say, even though they're not exactly the same, after you've had them for a week or so, you will find it surprising that anybody ever wanted to hang up a pig by the leg and bleed them out and eat their butt muscles, basically. You'll wonder why anybody bothered with that.
Okay. So, yeah, and you raise a few good points about balance there, and certainly for me, I'm one of those people that struggle with balance because of the temptation thing, so it's best if I just cut things out altogether for certain things. So other things I've got really good discipline about, and a little bit of balance is good. And right now, as I mentioned to you previously, that I am eating more vegan foods, but on the weekend I live in Japan, and our family outing is sushi, so we go to a sushi restaurant and I just eat sushi, which is my bit of fish on the weekend. Plus I still really enjoy ice creams, which I haven't broken yet, but I've started to feel, because I've done this for about 2 months now, is that by taking these things away, I love the clean feeling first of all, and the energy, everything seems to be just greater in my life so far. And I've noticed that, you know, having some ice cream on a Saturday night, the feelings that I feel on Sunday morning, no alcohol, nothing else, very clean, is just very noticeable, to the point where I've just said to myself, I just can't do it anymore, because I've woken up feeling that bit more ill. And previously, like if you look a couple of years ago, I could have spent a night drinking alcohol, eating ice cream, eating all the meat in the world, and woken up sort of feeling normal, not feeling, noticing these minor little changes in diet so dramatically.
Have you tried the vegan ice cream?
I've had some soy milk ice cream, which was fantastic. I just can't find it anywhere here, so I'm looking for it.
Oh, okay. Well, when we're done, I'm going to send you a package. And we're I'm sorry to hear you're having trouble. Here it is, absolutely everywhere. It's taken over the market.
Right. What is it? A soy-based ice cream?
Oh, there's all kinds of them. We got soy-based, rice-based, almond. You know, we have, well, there's almond milk, soy milk, rice milk, oat milk, hemp milk. Yeah. And each one of these is then turned into ice creams. And you don't need them. Don't get me wrong. And some people might call it junk food. I mean, it's just there for entertainment purposes, really. But for so many people, when they get away from dairy, they just feel dramatically better. I mean, and that's a whole other topic. You know, as we know, dairy products, they not only have fat, they have cholesterol, they have hormones. Yeah. They have a lot of things you don't want. So getting to the almond milk versions or the soy milk versions is a good move.
Okay, well, I want to get to your book, Cheese Trap, but I just want to go back to, you know, the idea of processed foods as well. And for me, you know, the more raw and natural that the food can be seems to be better. And that's just, you know, in my experimentations, seems to be when I feel the best. What are we risking, like, with all these processed sort of not meat meats like bacon or sausages or processed soy ice creams, etc. I mean, is this all going to be negative for us in the long run as well? And I guess time will tell, but I know they're producing, you know, sort of fake meat, if you will, as well, and even meat in a lab now. And I don't know if that's any good. What are your thoughts on all this sort of processed technology, what technology can do?
Well, processed means different things. Sometimes it means ground up.
Yeah.
So a ground up soybean or a ground up almond is not going to hurt you. And so if I make it into a patty or something like that, if I take some beans and some rice and I mix them up with my mixing bowl and yeah. I make a burger out of it, and if you eat that instead of the one that came from animal muscle,
yeah.
that is a great move.
Yeah.
Secondly, studies have actually looked at soy milk in particular and, soy products, soy milk, tofu, and others, because some people have had the idea that they might cause cancer. And the opposite turns out to be true, that people who consume the most soy products for women, they have about a 30% reduction in their risk of breast cancer. And women who have had cancer in the past, those who consume the most soy have about a 30% reduction in dying of their cancer. So soy is helpful. And I do think that the less processing, the better.
Yeah.
So if it's edamame, which is just steamed soybeans in the pod, great. Tofu, soy milk. Once you're adding a lot of stuff to it, you do think, well, maybe I don't need all that salt.
Yeah.
But even at its most processed, it is far healthier than the meat version of these, because there are hormones in dairy products. There's hormones in meat. It's not there in the soy.
Okay.
There's no cholesterol. There's no animal fat in the soy, so you're gonna be better off.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Cool. And one of the sweets that I eat here in Japan is what they call mochi, which you're probably familiar with, which is a ground rice, and they've got a sort of sweet bean, red bean in the middle. A lot of people don't like it, but I just love it, and I know it's got some sugar in it, but it's really my good excuse dessert. And I think we're beings of pleasure, so you know that's probably the thing that we struggle with the most is just cutting out those things that we actually do that do bring us joy. Not about, you know, over consuming, which they have a tendency to make us do as well, but just really having that moment where we can just enjoy that ice cream or something like that.
Yeah, and you can have the healthier versions of it. And by the way, sugar is not poison. It's you don't want to overdo it. We don't want to go crazy. But sugar is actually the fuel that your brain runs on, and your muscles run on sugar.
Yeah.
So, for example, if you eat a banana, the natural fruit sugars come out. They go into your blood. They power your movements.
Yeah.
If you eat pasta or rice or potatoes, the glucose that's in those comes out and it powers your brain. So there's nothing wrong with that. Mm. So where we run into trouble sometimes is with things like soda, where there's a lot more sugar than you can use, and it's hidden because you can't really see it.
Okay, so what is the? I mean, let's go there for a second. What is the sugars that we should be avoiding? Obviously, sodas, and I mean, I hear refined sugars is the ones that, you know, aren't good for us. But how do we navigate our way through that landscape as well?
Well, I think we have to remember that your body runs on sugar, and having a little bit of sugar is not such a big deal.
Yeah.
But where I think we run into trouble, and it's when we have large amounts of just added sugar to things. But even then, I think it's very hard to make the case that that's somehow worse for us than having a bacon omelet or something like that, where you're getting a boatload of fat and cholesterol.
Okay, cool. So let's talk about Cheese Trap. What made you write this book? That's my first question.
We were doing research studies here, and people would start vegan diets and they would do great. Their diabetes would go away, they would lose weight, they'd feel fantastic. And I found a lot of people would say to me, it's true, my diabetes is gone, my cholesterol is better than it's ever been, but I have to say, I miss cheese. I kept hearing this over and over again. They would say, it wasn't ice cream, it wasn't milk, it was specifically cheese. And I thought, what's that about? You know, it smells like old socks. Why do people get hooked on this stuff? So,
it certainly does.
And so I looked into it, and it's a fascinating story. And I'm going to argue three things. First of all, cheese is fattening. Uh-huh. Secondly, I'm going to say it's addicting. And third, I am going to say it has a number of health issues that are surprising to people. So if you're wondering where your migraines and sore joints are coming from, we might have found the answer. And I wouldn't have called it the cheese trap if I didn't have a way for you to get out of it. So Drina Burton and I worked on, well, I'm going to give her all the credit. In working on this book, she is the one who came up with a fabulous recipe. So I can make you the greatest cheesecake in the world with no cheese in it.
Yeah, wow. And that's what I really am fascinated by. And again, I mean, I like a bit of cheese on pizza. Again, I don't think it's the thing that I struggle with the most. To be honest, I really enjoy that ice cream, so that's probably my battle. But yeah, really cool. So let's talk about the first question that pops to my mind is, why is cheese addictive? I mean, what is that all about? I mean, isn't anything addictive? Because if it makes us feel good, we want to crave and we crave more.
No. It's a hot summer day and you might like a crisp apple.
Yeah.
But have you ever eaten six apples? No. Did you ever feel like you're craving an apple? You had it yesterday, I just have to have one, and I feel really terrible because I'm not having it. A smoker needs a cigarette to just feel normal, and they know they're hooked on it, and they hide it, and so forth. So, no, some things are addictive, like tobacco, alcohol.
Yep.
I'm going to put cheese in that category, but most foods are not addictive. So you might like a strawberry or a banana or whatever, but you're never going to crave them. You're never going to rob a store in order to feed your strawberry habit. And there are really three reasons why cheese is this way. And by the way, the reason we know this is that people will report it. I mean, they'll just say, I couldn't live without it. I feel great. I have to have it. If that's not you, then maybe you're not addicted to it. But there are three explanations for it. The first is that it's salty. There's a lot of salt used. There's more salt in cheese, ounce or gram per gram, than there is in, say, potato crisps.
Right.
Yeah, there is. Secondly, it's fatty. And when you mix the fat and the salt together, you have like French fries, chips, onion rings. People love that salty, fatty taste. But the big thing here is there are actually opiate chemicals in the cheese itself, and they were made by the cow. Mm. As you digest the dairy protein, which is called casein, C-A-S-E-I-N, opiates that are coated into it come out, and they go to your brain, and they attach to the very same receptor that heroin would attach to. They're not as strong. The strongest of them has about 1/10 the brain binding power compared with pure pharmacy-grade morphine. So it's not enough to get you arrested, but it's just enough to make you think, I really enjoyed that. Mm. And so people have it again and again, and they might gain weight, but they argue and say, I think I should be having cheese in my life. And they come up with all kinds of rationalizations about it. So
I'll exercise more, cut out sugars, but cheese is something I've got to keep.
Well, sugar is similar. Sugar does not have any opiates in it,
yeah.
unlike cheese. But sugar does trigger the release of opiates in the brain.
Right.
I think that sugar addiction is a real thing too.
Yeah. I'd agree with that. Certainly in experimentation myself is, cutting out dairy or reducing dairy I've noticed the changes. And again, I've only noticed that most of these changes when I've got into a lot better health, when I've sort of been derailing my body, in those situations, I didn't notice these minor changes. But now if I, go a week without something, I can feel the changes. And I think, that's something important for me to mention to the audience listening, is how much you can notice changes, the healthier sort of you become, because I think the body sort of becomes tolerant to how you poison it.
That's true. People sometimes don't realize that they have never been quite normal, and suddenly when they get on a healthy diet, their digestion gets back, their sleep gets back, their skin looks better, and they think, wow, why didn't I do this a long time ago? But there's another piece of it. There are elite athletes who use a vegan diet, a completely plant-based diet, because they need the competitive edge. Or to put it the other way, there are some people who would be top athletes, but they're holding themselves back. And the way to look at it is, let's say I'm playing tennis, and the match has been going on for 90 minutes now, and suddenly I start to realize that my energy is no good. Well, could it be that the cheese sandwich I ate for lunch, the fat molecules got into my blood, they made my blood more viscous, more thick, So my blood is not like water anymore. It's more like oil. So it doesn't oxygenate my muscles so well anymore. And I'm getting fatigued sooner. Mm-hmm. And if I always trained that way, I thought, well, this is just me. I just kind of run out of gas. When people go to a cleaner diet, they discover their energy is better. So when you look at especially the endurance sports, there are lots and lots of people doing a completely vegan diet because they don't want the inflammation. They don't want to cut their performance.
Okay.
I mean, it's not a guarantee. I'm not saying you're going to be at the top of the tennis world, but you would be surprised at the effects that it has for people. They really feel it.
Yeah, well, I did a research recently just on some of the athletes that adopt their vegan style. Lifestyle, and it's phenomenal. There's many of them out there doing it, and they're really amazing performers. So perhaps there's some sort of evidence in that alone. Going back to the cheese or the dairy product has the opiate in it. That was quite surprising when I heard that. Can you talk a little bit about that? Why is that the case? Why is this opium in dairy?
Why did Mother Nature pack it in there? Our best guess is that it's part of the mother-infant bond. That the baby, if a calf did not want to nurse, the calf said, "Mom, I'm going to go in the forest. I'll come back Thursday." That calf is not going to do very well.
Yeah.
And if you ever looked at a human baby, they have this look of tremendous intensity as they're nursing, and then afterwards they collapse asleep. And obviously they've had a stomach full of casomorphins. So although we think it's the beauty of the mother-infant bond, I hate to tell you, you just drugged the kid.
Well, that makes sense. So for the reason of survival, that's why it's in there. Wow.
And then that also might explain why cheese is more addicting than milk, for example, because the opiates are in the milk protein, but when you concentrate the protein when you make cheese, and so you're getting... Cheese is sort of like dairy crack.
Right. Okay. So interesting. I mean, there's so much to your research, and again, I wanted to keep it as simple as possible. Certainly, we've touched on meats, sugars, and dairy. And by the sounds of it, you would suggest that for a first step would be dairy. Is that where we'd start first for anyone looking for health, or would you just say go all in and cut it all?
Well, that's the process. First of all, there's a way that we do this in our clinic that works really, really well. And I have to say, it's not really hard to do. It's the change I'm going to describe is much easier than quitting smoking, for example.
Okay.
People are worried about it because they think to be vegan means you have to like folk music or maybe you have to wear tie-dyed clothes. And I'm happy to tell you that you can detest folk music and never wear anything tie-dyed and you can still be healthy. So here's how we do it. Step one is to understand how foods affect you, because you have to want to change, just in the same way as a person has to want to quit smoking or whatever it is. But for most people, they can get there pretty easily. And in the cheese trap, we do describe how hormonal conditions and weight problems and so forth tend to get better.
Yeah.
Then what I do is I ask people to take a week. And during this week, you're not getting rid of anything. You're not taking anything out of your diet. But what you are doing is you're trying vegan foods. So for breakfast... I haven't had porridge oats in a long time. Let me cook that up, see how it is. I haven't had a veggie sausage ever. Let me try that. For lunch, let me try a spaghetti that doesn't have a meat sauce. Maybe it's got a tomato sauce, or I'll try a cheeseless pizza or whatever. So all I'm doing for the first 7 days is trying the alternatives.
Yep.
And writing down the things that work for me for breakfast, lunch, dinner. And in 7 days, you're going to have lots of them. So then step two is once you've got your list of foods you like, now you take 3 weeks and eat the foods that you identified. So you already know you like them, so it's pretty easy. But 3 weeks, no animal products at all, completely vegan, but eat the foods that you've figured out that you enjoy. After 3 weeks, two things happen. The first is you're healthier. You're losing weight. Your cholesterol is better. Your blood sugar is getting better. Your digestion is sorting itself out and everything else. But the second thing is you discover that your tastes are different, that you're starting to like healthier foods and the unhealthy things are just they've lost their appeal. And it's a really kind of neat way to go.
Mm.
So short term, just give it a try. See how the benefits that you might get.
Yeah, so I like that, the process overall, and to start with that first step of just really understanding how food affects you and doing your own research, finding out your own information, because that really gives you the motivation to give it a go. And again, you know, for me, interviewing you today or reading, you know, books on health, that has given me the strength to really continue, to continue along that process and my own journey. And I don't think it would come from anyone else saying, Lee, you need to, you know, try a vegan diet because you'll be better off for it. It had to come from me starting it. And I think that's an important part of the process. No matter what change that we desire in life, it has to come from some sort of internal desire, right?
Sometimes people react to a person like me who writes books on health. they sometimes hearken back to memories of their mother trying to give them helpful advice, and so they get resentful.
Yeah.
And I have to remind them that I'm actually not their parent. I'm not even related to them at all. I'm a doctor who's found certain things, and I want to share them with them. And when they can put this to use on their own terms, they benefit. And last night I was at an event signing copies of The Cheese Trap at a bookstore, and a man came up to me in tears. He said, "You've never met me, but you saved my life." He was massively obese about 6 months ago.
Right.
With diabetes, he was put on insulin injections, and he said, "I need to get off this." And he read about what we'd written about diabetes, and he got off his insulin. He's lost an enormous amount. He looks healthy now. His energy is fantastic, and he said, "I just didn't believe this was possible, and you made this possible." So in other words, for people who get into this kind of adolescent rebelliousness, that's, you know, you let that go. This is just between you and the foods that you choose, and seeing what kind of fuel you want to put in your tank, and see if your engine can burn better.
Yeah. Well, it's your life. You've got to make that choice, and I think you sort of said that as well. And I love the process of, you know, trying things out, you know, being experimental with it, and looking for those things that you do enjoy. Because I mean, again, enjoying the process is what keeps us the motivation to give it going. And if we feel like we're sacrificing or missing out on that enjoyment, we're likely to not continue with it. And I think that's a part of the struggle as well. So your process sort of aligns with that as well, that need, I believe. So that's really cool. So people can get started with this, give it a little bit of a go. There's a lot of trends out there at the moment, Neil, that seem to be consuming a lot of people. I've given all sorts of, you know, diets a go, I suppose. I've sort of dabbled with this and that, and paleo, you know, seems to be a big thing at the moment. People talk about, you know, an all paleo diet, which, you know, the information that's out there makes sort of sense at a surface level, without going too deep into it. And I don't think people generally go too deep into it. They take it as surface level and then give it a go and think it's going to be the best thing in the world. And the other one is, you know, all these quick meal replacements, so shakes or bars or whatever you call it. Can you talk to us a little bit about both of these sort of trends that seem to be out there, and perhaps what we should be doing to question ourselves further to whether they're good or not?
Yeah, well, the paleo diet, you know, you can see some value to it in the sense that we're going to go back in time toward maybe what we're healthy, a bit healthier. However, I think it's a little bit artificial and even a little romantic, because the paleo period is, the theory is, okay, I'm not going to eat anything that requires agriculture. So I'm going to stop my little calendar when people learned how to put a seed in the ground and make things grow. But they are going to start after the Stone Age, when people gained the capacity to eat meat. So we've got hatchets and arrowheads and things. So it's this sort of romantic caveman period of time where we imagine ourselves to be mighty warriors with spears who are going to kill an antelope, but we're not going to be a farmer who grows beans and vegetables and things like that. Now, to its credit, the paleo diet eliminates dairy products, so don't have those, and you're not going to have a lot of sugary things because they hadn't discovered those back then. And so that's a good switch. But on the other hand, it's the idea that people at that time were eating a lot of meat is a romantic fantasy, because eating meat is a challenge. To be a successful hunter is not so easy, and the hunter-gatherers are mostly gatherers, really, and once in a while they get some meat. But more to the point, If you go further in, back in time, we're not carnivores. We're great apes. Like a chimpanzee or a gorilla or an orangutan or a bonobo, we are primates. We are great apes. And great apes are herbivores with very few exceptions. And so if you really look at the foods that are most helpful for us, it's plant-based foods.
Okay. And what about, and again, I talked about, you know, meal replacements as well, but what about location? Because I know a lot of people say, you know, it depends on where you've sort of, your genetics or your history comes from. And they certainly talk about, you know, places up north that might rely on a lot of stored fish products or preserved fish and things like that, or where there's not an abundance of plants to consume.
It's only because they have no choice.
Yeah.
If you were at the extreme north and you could get some broccoli and some sweet potatoes and things like that, you would be a healthier person.
Yeah, right.
But the fact that those things don't grow means it's either got to be imported or you're not eating it at all. And the health in those regions is not good. We all came from presumably equatorial Africa. Hmm. Or somewhere nearby there. And because humans are so restless, we find reasons to go other places.
Yeah.
The foods that we would consume are not that much different from the foods that other great apes would have consumed naturally.
Yeah, and I thought you might say that. It's sort of based on that need factor, and if it wasn't available, you'd find what was and use that as a replacement. Very cool stuff. Look, there's a lot in this, Neil, and I do appreciate your time. I want to run into a couple of final questions just to wrap things up here. I ask all guests these questions. And the first one I'd like to ask you is, what sort of routines or rituals do you have in your life that you believe contribute to your success?
Well, to the extent that I have any success...
Well, you're in a band as well, aren't you?
I am. Have you heard Carbon Works Music?
I have, and I actually just listened to you speak on the Rich Roll podcast, and he played your song, and I thought, oh, that's amazing. Like, what an interesting life you lead.
Well. Thank you for saying that. Yeah, the band is called Carbon Works, as in we are all carbon, and these are our works. And it's a funny thing. When I was a little kid, I was sort of chained to the piano and the cello because my parents thought that any civilized person had to have an appreciation for the arts. And I kept it up. And when I was in medical school and residency, I was a good student and I worked hard during the day. But at night, I had musical groups and we played out a lot. And Carbon Works is my third record. And as I'll tell you a funny thing. We have a song called Louder Than Words that this week is number 14 on the radio list here in America. So it's not something I intended to do, but I'm glad that people are enjoying it. And if you go to YouTube or Pandora or any of these places and you look for Carbon Works, you'll find it.
Yeah, I'll stick it in the links, guys, so check it out. I actually heard it, Neil, because I heard it then. And then I heard it somewhere. I think it was on like a Japanese commercial or something. I heard it in the background. I don't know if that was true or not because I just heard it and it sounded like it. But yeah, maybe there. It's spread.
So. I love it. It's really very nice. But otherwise, you know, like everybody, I did all kinds of bad things when I was an adolescent and risky things. But as I've grown, I tried to break some bad habits. I did quit smoking. I stopped eating animal products. That's a good thing. I try to exercise regularly. So for me, exercise means about a 30-minute run about three times a week. One thing that helps me a lot personally is to go to sleep. Doesn't matter how good your book is, 10 o'clock, turn off the lights, and you got so much better energy the next day. There are times where projects make me get up extra early, but those are good things to do. Do have some fun. For me, that means getting together with my musician friends, and I find that helps a lot.
Cool. So what time do you wake up in the day?
Oh, I'll tell you. It could be around 5:30, something like that.
Okay.
Pretty common.
Cool. What advice would you give your 20-year-old self?
Oh, great question. I think it's important. Other people will say the same. Think big. Don't be afraid of anybody or anything. Don't chase money. There are so many people who are worried about money. You need enough money to cover a place to live and things like that. But there are so many things wrong with this world. And our life is so short. let's focus on fixing those things. So whether we're making this a world better place for humans or for animals or protecting the environment, focus on those things so that the legacy we leave to the next generation is something that we're proud of. So if we're not going to live forever, and there are always going to be problems, but if we tackle them in the best way we can, I think that's what life's all about.
Really, really important. I love that message. What is your meaning of success?
Reducing the suffering that others go through.
Okay. And what, do you have a productivity piece of advice that you'd like to share? Something that makes you more effective?
Don't put anything in your body that doesn't belong there. And I have to say, that includes for me caffeine and alcohol and things like that. Now, this is for extra credit. If you're not yet vegan, start there and have all the coffee you want to. But I have to say, I personally find that the usual kind of stimulants that other people have, like caffeine or energy drinks, they're not as good for me as just my basic get out of bed in the morning brain. So I don't go with any of that stuff.
Oh, interesting. And what advice would you give someone looking to make change in any aspect of their life? First step.
Take 3 weeks, go vegan, see how you do.
All right, cool. Favorite food?
I've got a bunch of them, but I'll give you two. If I'm looking for something hearty, I love a big bean burrito, which is like beans wrapped up with jalapeno peppers.
Yep.
In a burrito with a nice red sauce on top. Or if I'm looking for something lighter, it would be vegan sushi and miso soup.
Favorite leisure activity?
Playing my Les Paul.
Playing your what?
That's my guitar. My guitar is called a Les Paul. Lespaul. He was a great guitarist, and he invented this. He was like a pioneer in the world of.
Right. I got you. Cool. I like it. And have you got a favorite book or a book you've read recently that you'd like to recommend?
Well, I have to recommend that you read The Cheese Chap. If you haven't read that, that's really where you got to go. But let me say a shout out to my friend. There's a guy named Michael Greger. Michael Greger is a doctor who wrote a book with the world's greatest title. It's called How Not to Die. And it's just really good advice on how to tackle the things that kill us prematurely. So his name is Greger. G-R-E-G-E-R. Greger. Michael Greger.
I'll stick him in the show notes, guys. He's I've listened to some of his presentations and
He's very, very clever. He's smart, he's always right, and he's funny as can be.
Yeah, I like both of your approaches to it. You share the message in a way that makes sense. It's easy to make sense, which I think is really important about making, you know, allowing people to make the change. Which is really, you know, credit to you. And Michael as well. What do you have a favorite quote?
I do. I might get the context slightly wrong, but at the end of World War I, and so many people had been killed, and there was so little hope for solving conflicts in a better way, that people started to develop the League of Nations, and that ultimately then led to the efforts to have an effective United Nations. And at the time that the League of Nations was being formed, some people said, are you optimistic? You know, given human nature, is this going to work? And one of the framers of the League of Nations said, I'm not optimistic. I'm not pessimistic. I am determined. And I thought that's a good way to think.
Hmm. Yeah, I like it. Do you believe we all have a why?
That we all have a...
A why, a purpose?
No, I don't believe life has a purpose.
Okay.
And I know that some people who come from a religious background will not share that view. I hate to say it, my belief is that our DNA propels us forward to try to reproduce itself and is as aggressive and competitive as it needs to be to advance itself, and that sometimes pushes us to do things that are regrettable. Given that fact, I think that we have to try to tame some of our things that our DNA is trying to force us to do, and to undo some of the suffering that people inflict on others. And for me, that's the purpose that I've adopted.
Wow, that's cool. I like it. And what does living life with passion and purpose mean to you?
It means taking this little wink of time that we have and trying to be as effective as I can and as kind as I can, but not to back away from the challenges that we face, but to confront them, take them in hand, and be as helpful as I can be.
Really cool. So, mate, thank you very much, Neil, for coming on the show. How can people best reach out to you and find out more about what you're doing?
Our website is pcrm.org. That stands for Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, pcrm.org. I'm on Facebook and all those things under my own name, Neil Barnard. Yep. And my band is Carbon Works, and you'll see them at carbonworksmusic.com.
Great. Awesome stuff, mate. Thank you very much for your time. Guys, I'll stick all the links in the show notes, plus his book, Cheese Trap. I'll stick the link to his Carbon Works as well. I'll put the YouTube video in there or something like that. So check it out at thehiddenwhy.com. And Neil, again, thank you so much for your time, mate. It's been a pleasure, and I'm glad you could share.
Likewise. You're a great host. Thank you for letting me share this time with you.
Thanks very much. Guys, check it all out, thehiddenwhy.com. Until next time, peace, passion, and purpose. See you soon. There you have it, gang. That's today's episode done. What did you think? Did you enjoy it? Did it bring you some value? I'd love to hear from you. Make sure you jump onto thehiddenwhy.com to this episode and leave your comments in the fields below. Also, connect with me, guys, while you're there. Facebook, Twitter, and my email address, thehiddenwhyguy@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you guys. I'd love to hear about what you're passionate about, what brings you joy in life. So connect with me there, guys, any way you wish. Also, guys, I want to ask you, before you go, for a huge, huge, huge favor. And the favor is simple. It's just to go to thehiddenwhy.com and subscribe to my newsletter. And here's why. I want to keep you up to date on a project that I've been working on. For the last year, I've been writing my newest book called The Ultimate Life Map. It's really about helping people align their lives with their purpose, with their why, so they can live more truly, freely, fulfilled, and happy. That's what it's all about. So if I can get into more hands, then I can help more people with that. But in doing so, the funds from this book, guys, I'm going to launch a project to help raise funds to support a third world community, to build skills there, to help these children that aren't as privileged as we are, that don't have all the resources that we have, so they can set themselves up and hopefully live towards a more promising life as well. So guys, I really want to ask for your help, and the best thing you can do for me right now is just to subscribe to my newsletter. Jump online, subscribe to the newsletter, and that way I can keep you up to date with what's going on, guys. You can help me really, you know, spread the message, get this book out there into more hands, and in doing so, we can raise funds to support this community. I've got a couple of options there now, so more information on that to come as well. But guys, that's my favor from you today. Please just jump online, subscribe to my newsletter so I can keep you posted with this project. I'm really passionate about it, guys, and it'd be really great if you can support me with this. That's it from me, guys. You know what to do. You need to go out there, breathe more passion into every single moment. You need to do everything with greater purpose, and in doing so, you will discover your hidden why. This is Lee Manozzi. Thank you. Until next time, peace, passion, and purpose. See you soon.